Hello everyone. As we begin to unlock the secrets held in our DNA, we could all live healthier for a lot longer. But how much longer is the key question? How far can we push the boundaries? How do we defy the natural phenomenon of aging? But more importantly, what implications would that have? In this podcast, I'd like to explore the current scientific and medical restrictions on life and how, with the advances in science, we may be able to overcome them. This in itself raises a number of serious concerns. What might the social, economic, and ethical implications be of everyone living their lives truly to the fullest? With an ever-increasing population, how does that affect access to resources, which we know are limited? Now, before I continue, I'd just like to thank my Upper Sixth Biology student Manon for conducting the research and providing content for me to use for this podcast. In a separate podcast that I've recorded some time ago, I looked at the biology of aging, discussing how an organism undergoes physiological changes that cause a decline in biological processes, and especially how it reacts to what we call metabolic stress. The focus there was very much on the decline as such, whereas today the focus is how to counteract those physical changes, if you like, ideally before they manifest. Now, diseases such as cancer, cardiovascular disease, and neurodegeneration are three of the most prevalent diseases associated with aging. They are, thankfully, or there are rather, ways to help prevent them, such as keeping stress levels low and regular exercise. But they merely slow the onset of aging and don't prevent it altogether. Life expectancy is increasing. However, in recent years, the rate of increase has reduced significantly. It's not inevitable that it should have tailed off. A lack of funding in health and social care is no doubt responsible. Some have suggested that it could be due to the increasing complexity of age-related medical conditions that are occurring, and that research into these medical conditions is taking longer than before, due to the intricacy of those diseases. Well, that's only according to researcher Raleigh, who said that in 2019. Gerontology is the comprehensive, multidisciplinary study of aging and older adults, within which is a specialisation of something called biogerontology, where the main focus there is to understand why we age and how we can prevent it or indeed slow it down. Now, there are two main theories within biogerontology about how we could increase lifespan. The first is by restricting calorific intake. Besides decreasing risks of heart disease and diabetes, studies have shown that by eating just 15% less from the age of 25, an additional 4.5 years could be added to one's life. The reason for that is not completely understood, but it's thought to be associated with a reduction in the hormone triiodothyronine, or T3, being produced, which causes a reduction in metabolic activity and therefore tissue aging. The second relates to changes in DNA structure and the concept of manipulating it, altering it in some way. Mammals' strands of DNA are wound up tightly into chromosomes, and this is how DNA is stored within the cells. At the end of each chromosome is something called a telomere. Now, telomeres act as a, I guess you could call it a bumper, if you like, on DNA, protecting it from damage. Each time DNA replicates, the telomeres get slightly damaged and shortened. Now, that doesn't cause a problem to begin with, but once a cell has replicated too many times, the telomeres are so short that the DNA is no longer protected. Hence, the cell dies and stops replicating. And that is the fundamental aspect of the aging process. Studies involving the naked mole rat have shown that they have higher levels of telomere rebuilding enzymes than most other animals, including humans. Data implies no correlation at all between the age of a naked mole rat and the likelihood of death. In fact, environmental factors play a more significant role than this decline in biological processes. A fairly recent study from Scotland's Rural College found that cows that lived longer had longer telomeres, as reported in the BBC in 2020. There are currently no recognised methods of how to preserve human telomeres without causing more harmful side effects than those brought on by ageing. Ageing is recognised by many in the scientific community as a disease, and technically, diseases are, or can be, treatable. So perhaps it really is just a matter of time before we can defy this natural phenomenon. Not just slow it, but perhaps reverse it. A lot depends, however, on the capabilities of this planet really homing everyone. It sounds stark, but current predictions put the human population on an exponential course until around 2075. Then, supposedly, we'll hit the stationary phase of growth. Now, some of you may know which phase follows that one. Renowned researcher at UCL, David Satterthwaite, suggests that it's not the number of people on the land that is the issue, really, but the number of consumers and the scale and nature of their consumption. He is, of course, talking about consumption of vital resources. Current population predictions don't take into consideration what would happen if there were a scientific breakthrough enabling us to cure ageing. In 2017, nearly half of all worldwide deaths were at age over 70. Hence, they had died from old age and its related diseases. In the UK, this same year, there were just over 755,000 live births and little over 607,000 deaths recorded. Now, if we take the global statistic of roughly 50% of deaths being due to old age and subtract that from the 2017 death toll in the UK, there would only have been around 303, roughly, and 500,000 deaths. But still, 755,000 plus births. Now that's clearly unsustainable. Where do all these people go? What physical land can they occupy? More importantly, what do we do about their inevitable carbon footprint? We're already struggling to tackle climate change as it is. Compulsory euthanasia is clearly unethical and a way too drastic a measure. Therefore, a Child Restriction Act may have to be put in place. When China was enforcing the one-child policy, it's estimated that 400 million births were prevented. Sons were preferred over daughters, which led to high levels of female babies being killed or abandoned. Moral responsibility for this would lie with the government. It's unsurprising, therefore, that there was also a rise in the number of abortions under the One Child Act. Now, currently under the UK, abortions are legal in certain circumstances. If, for example, there was a significant risk to the mother's life, or if the baby were born with a severe disability. Under an obligation to restrict the numbers of births, governments would be compelled to make abortion more readily available. In other podcasts, I've spoken in detail about human population changes, how agriculture, food production and industry, i.e. jobs that pay wages, how they are at the root of growth. And I've spoken about how nowadays more women are prioritising work and career progression over having children. Not to say that they are not having children, but more are having them later in life. Now just imagine if we were able to live forever. It would then be possible for women to have more children without it interfering with their careers, potentially leading to an increase in the birth rate, which would be unsustainable. It's definitely a socio-economic quandary, let's say. And what about the uncontrollable spread of disease in such a densely populated world? As Sir David Attenborough said in relation to the COVID-19 outbreak, the more dense a population you keep, the quicker a disease will spread. Humans would find themselves having to encroach on land already inhabited by wildlife. Most agents of infectious diseases come from human contact with wildlife, so perhaps we need to consider the environmental issues of an age-defying population. If it were possible to live another 50 years, let's say, over the current UK average of around 81 years, that could have a huge impact on education, work, retirement. So let me explain the reasoning. The retirement age of 65 would no longer be feasible. Older people would not need to retire from age-related health problems so early. So the world would likely face the problem of mass unemployment, as there would simply be too many people for the amount of jobs actually available. On the other hand, this could potentially result in increased economic wealth due to the fact that people would have time for more than one career and to become highly skilled within specialist areas. Therefore, I don't think that economic problems will be a limiting factor on how long we can let people live for, as society could be reconstructed to enable economic wealth even with an increased lifespan. The key question we all need to ask ourselves is whether curing death from ageing is truly desirable. A study carried out by Chapman University in 2018, titled Survey of American Fears, showed that roughly 29% of Americans were scared of death, and 56% were scared by the thought of people they know dying. That reveals how common a fear of death is within society. But does that mean delaying death is a healthy way to deal with that fear? Society can't escape the fact that dying is a bodily process that should be talked about, not avoided. That's certainly the view of a consultant in palliative medicine and published author, Dr. Catherine Mannix. Now, even if aging is curable, death is not. She says the fear of death will remain. Perhaps, though, if we have the means to cure aging and prevent painful deaths from its associated diseases, surely that would be ethically acceptable. Let's consider for a moment that we are able to prolong life, most likely through advancements in technology. For anyone who has listened to me discuss genetic engineering and gene technologies, you'll already be aware of the vast developments in this field, epigenetic reprogramming being just one example. So who would have access to any treatment that would actually prolong life? It's likely to be very expensive, especially when first developed. Hence, only the very wealthy could potentially afford it. Then the already prominent social divide between the rich and the poor could be made significantly worse. As John Harris, bioethicist at the University of Manchester, highlights, these economic health injustices are already prevalent, but not considered to be a reason to not give life-saving treatment. I don't think there really is a set answer to the question posed at the start of this podcast. Well, certainly not yet, anyway. It's a multifaceted problem. At what point do medical advancements become problematic? Is that even the problem, rather? Is it just that there's too many people, really, to make this whole thing work? Too many societal challenges to overcome? If ageing ultimately proves to be a disease that one day we are able to cure, then we really are going to need to address all of them. So on that note, I'd just like to say a big thank you to everybody for listening to this podcast. I'd like to thank Manon, again, my up-sixth student, for the research that she conducted for this particular podcast. And if you have any questions, as always, about the content, do get in touch at kytosbiology@gmail.com. Thanks again. Until next time.